Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. It's the mothership here on Grizzly Productions. I'm Mike Quackenbush. That's Clayton Morris. And we get together once every week, and we have for about the last 198 weeks in a row, to talk about whatever the heck we want to talk about. That's really the only format we have on this program.
Yeah, what are we going on now? 6 years doing this show?
No, I don't think that's exactly right.
Close.
I think
it's getting close.
You know, we have taken a few weeks off here and there, to be fair, but this is right around the time when we started the podcast. This is the fourth complete year. So right. We are starting our fifth year very soon.
That's crazy. And I love this time of year. I mean, it's when we started this show. For those of you who aren't familiar, Mike and I grew up across the street from each other, best friends for life. What was that? Right. Who was that wrestler that did the four?
NWO for life. For life. We've been best friends really up until about a week ago.
Right.
And
Mike,
I think,
broke up with
the program's really going to change radically now.
We should actually do that. We should just do like a contentious style, crossfire style show. Like I broke up with you as my friend, and now like we still have this obligation to do the show, but we're going to just be cantankerous to each other. You know.
Mm-hmm. I do have a show like that, Clayton. It's called The Trending Show.
Right. Actually, I have to say I'm enjoying that show more and more, the trending show that you do with Natalie. And
mm-hmm. Oh, you know her, do you?
I do. I've met her once or twice. And this week you guys chatted up quite a bit about the new NBC show Revolution,
mm-hmm.
which just kicked off. And I thought that would make some good fodder for us to chat about here on the show. I posted up a Twitter message last night and asked folks, you know, what they thought of Revolution. Is it worthwhile? Because I guess the second episode was airing last night. And I got mixed reviews. I mean, a lot of people had some really nice things to say about the show, and then just like I guess anything that's out there in the public eye. And then there are people who thought it was a waste of time, poorly written,
sure.
A waste of talent. And so this, of course, the new J.J. Abrams show. And I thought this was a show that like sort of like you and I would have been all over. But it sort of – it kind of went below our radar, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I was largely unaware that this even existed. So
– yeah.
I don't know. I think this about the style of storytelling that we saw them employ in Lost, I see that in other forms of fictional storytelling as well, that modern audiences, I think there's a division between them. There are those that have the patience for a slower-paced story, and there are those that don't. The Killing is a really good example of that. Another AMC series, Rubicon, had like painfully slow pacing, but it was really rewarding if you watched it. The Wire, I think, is the same way. It moves very, very slowly, but it rewards you in the long term. But in an age where you know people's attention spans barely allow for 3-minute YouTube videos, there are definitely going to be people that aren't going to sit for 26 episodes or you know whatever it comprises a season of primetime TV nowadays, you know, waiting for that type of development. And I think that's the division that you see in the audiences, right? There are the people that just don't have the patience to give it a try and to wait and see. You know, they're more the instant gratification types. And then there's a part of the audience that is content to kind of sit back and let the storytellers do their job. And you have to put some faith in them, right? Like, I think if anyone's earned maybe a little bit of credit with us when it comes to that, it's probably J.J. Abrams. I think he's courted some favor from Lost.
I wonder if a show like The Wire would thrive in – well, I guess because it was on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different environment. I think the shows that live on HBO or paid premium – or you know on premium cable channels like that are afforded enough rope to hang themselves with. So to speak, mm-hmm. as if yeah. you know they're able to take that slower pacing, longer storytelling time, like Deadwood,
mm-hmm.
Which I loved, a great Western show. I think it lasted three seasons. You have some other shows though that have made their appearance on cable, like AMC. Of course, you have Breaking Bad. You have Hell on Wheels, which has been successful, and the pacing, I would have to say, if you compared it to network television, is much slower.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, when you have a show like Lost, which may be sort of the last of its breed on network television, there have been a number of shows that have tried to do it. Right? Yeah. Like, what was that, Terra Nova?
Right. Oh, it's strange that you bring that up. There's a new barista at my Starbucks who likes to quiz me about whatever T-shirt I have on. This is the same guy I talked about a few episodes ago when I had a Greatest American Hero T-shirt on.
Right.
And That's all he talks about. It's like, can you believe they canceled Terra Nova?
And you have your Terra Nova t-shirt on.
Yeah, he was really just like, he's hot about Terra Nova. And like, there's an online group somewhere that's trying to get it brought back. And, you know, what I think, you know, if I wrote down the URL, would you go there? And like,
and that never works,
I'm not
by
that
the
vested
way.
In Terra Nova. As you'll recall, like, I think you and I watched, what, 2 or 3 episodes of that. And we thought 6 to 10 episodes is going to be about where this is going to land.
Yeah. You were visiting up here in the Poconos where I'm at right now. And we were watching that last year. And boy, we were thinking, God. Why do they have to all have this teen angst involved in this? Why is teen angst the linchpin of this show? And apparently, right. That's some of the criticism of Revolution on NBC, which is that they're like, why do you have to have this teen angst? I'll read you some of this thread. I started a Branch thread, by the way. If you've not checked out Branch.com, it's pretty cool. You get a lot of actual thoughtful discussion about topics. You could start some wrestling threads over there and then post it on Twitter, and you'll get people who really want to actually spend some time communicating about this particular thing or that. You could do that for like King of Trios or other things. So anyway, I posted up NBC's Revolution, worth the hype or won't last was the question, and I had a lot of people weighing in on it. And Jason Snell, he's the editor of Macworld magazine. He said, no good. Mm-hmm. It was dull. It was a clean apocalypse. Nothing to keep me watching. Warmed over. It was a warmed over Jericho. Jericho was the show I couldn't remember a few weeks ago. Remember I was talking about that?
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, sort of a...
That was on Sci-Fi, wasn't it? Jericho? Or maybe it just got rerun on Sci-Fi.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was on like AMC or something. Or one of those channels. I don't know. But he said it was a waste of time and talent. Brian Papa writes, I liked it, but I didn't love it. The pacing of the pilot was a bit off. The big reveal at the end seemed like something that could have come in episode 5 or 6. And that was my criticism of Terra Nova, right? Which was that sort of post-apocalyptic world that they were in for the first 8 minutes of the show before they shuttled back to dinosaur time was far more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Right, and then we spent like 8 minutes there where you couldn't breathe because the oxygen was gone, and everyone, you know, if you were in the upper class, you had access to a breathing mask. If you didn't, you know, you were poor and you didn't have access to it. Like, that's far more interesting to me. Like, how did that unfold?
Yeah. No, yeah, I think the same thing. But you know, they were probably like, listen, I don't think we can really afford like a Blade Runner type special effect budget here, but if we have like 30 seconds of dinosaurs every other episode, we can probably swing that.
Right. So in Revolution, the idea, I guess it's a post-apocalyptic world where, no electricity, it's no computers, no nothing, right? I don't know the whole sort of archetypal angsty teens, though, turned off one of the writers here. David, he says, I didn't like the pilot. While the premise is good, the choice to focus on archetypal angsty teens really turned me off. But given that the creator, Eric Kripke, was also behind one of my favorite shows, Supernatural – I'll give this a few more episodes. And I had never watched Supernatural, and a lot of people say they love that quite a bit. And as a result, they'll give Revolution some more time to get off the ground and see if it flies.
Mm. Yeah, you got to give these things a little bit of time to find their shoes and, so to speak, and get going. You know, first couple episodes of any new series can be really rough.
Right.
You got to give it a little bit of time. You know, there's always going to be those first couple where they have to set up all the premise and everything else that you're going to need for the rest of the series, and they need time to do that. So
yeah,
that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, so it is the fall. So this past week, the first day of fall this weekend, and I love it. And have you?
Right, this is it. Right, we get about every year we get about 10 days of autumn weather.
Right.
So this is like day 3, so there's not much time left to get outdoors and enjoy this if you want.
What is it about this type? Here's my goal in bringing this up, which is I love the fall. It's my favorite time of year. I look forward to it every year. I don't know what it is. It's the pumpkins. It's the ambiance. It's the cooler
weather. I like
that
pumpkins was the first thing that you came up with.
Well, I think that's synonymous with this season, right? Pumpkins.
Sure, but I just think that's really interesting. Like, that was the very first thing that you came up with was pumpkins.
I could have said zip-ups, but you would have lampooned me for that. So
I would have believed you.
Right. So, you know, the zip-up sweaters, you get those out of the closet. The pumpkin spice latte at Starbucks.
I knew that was coming.
My buddy this weekend had me try a sip of his, what is that, salted mocha thing from Starbucks?
Yep, the salted caramel mocha. It's okay, but it's a little too sweet. Not like the end of the universe. And there's just something about that's really become a big thing over the last 2 to 3 years in the way they market these things, that they sprinkle a little sea salt on top of them. You know, the salted hot chocolate is another one that, if it hasn't rolled out yet, they're about to. It's another one of their autumn drinks. And, like, that really – it doesn't make the drink super awesome.
No, I don't know what it is. And he said, oh, I don't know if I could taste the salt until I got to the bottom of the cup. And boom, he got, like, hit in the face with, like, all this salt, which is the right. last thing you want at the bottom of a coffee drink.
Yes.
Like a big pile of salt. It reminds me.
I agree.
Unless you're like the salt creatures from that episode of Star Trek. Survived on the salt tablets.
Precisely like that.
Hey, maybe we should pause here and while we're getting going here and thank one of our show sponsors, our great friends over at Squarespace.com. They have an all new platform called the New Squarespace. So,
is that what they're calling the new one? They're calling it the New Squarespace?
The New Squarespace. They've left the numbers behind, but it really is Squarespace 6, right?
And right.
Boy, have they changed everything. I saw a bunch of people on Twitter saying, you know, how is it? Because I've been really thinking about joining up on Squarespace. And I wrote back to them, you know, and I said, hey, you're going to love it because it's the only place that I've had my websites for the past couple of years. And now with the new Squarespace, I mean, I would never go anywhere else. If you jump over like WordPress and you're thinking about like starting like a WordPress blog and you go like Blogger and you're like, maybe I'll try it here. And then you go over to Squarespace, you're like, what was I even thinking about looking at those other ones? It's incredible. And all of the features that they have in the new Squarespace are phenomenal. And Mike, you were just playing with some of them. We were talking about some of the responsive design, among other things.
Well, we were looking at this before we even jumped on the line here, because Clayton's built himself a brand new website called photographybegins.com. You can go over there and check it out if you want. And here's what's amazing about it, because I had not, until you were telling me a little bit about this, I had never looked at it on my iPad. You know, I'd only really looked at it on my full computer monitor. And talk about responsive design. What a totally different look. And I bet you if I looked at this on an iPhone, it would look totally different because it will customize everything to the device that the user is looking at. So you made a great point when we were talking about the fact that this is all included. This is the kind of thing that you used to have to pay an enormous amount of money for a web developer to do for you. And this is part. This is in the package. You're not paying. They just made it for you.
It's free.
That's right. So like what you said, I thought was an excellent point about like a restaurant. When you're on the go, you're trying to find a place to go. You want to look at the menu, see if they have something that you like. Chances are you're not in front of your computer. You're on your mobile device, right? You need this kind of responsive design in what you're doing. And the fact that, especially for this photography site that you've built, that it's got such great social media connectivity so that you don't have to then turn around and, oh, well, now I got to go publish this to Twitter or I got to go and put this on my Facebook or whatever. You can hook this up however you want, so you post it once, and it's done. It goes to all of your outlets. It's really second to none in the connectivity. And putting it together couldn't be simpler because, Clayton, you're not particularly well-versed in HTML coding, right?
No, I'm terrible at it. And that's the thing. I don't want to spend the time to have to worry about coding a website. And with Squarespace, it's just drag-and-drop functionality. So like, I don't know if you're looking at that blog post I made last night on about using photography in Lightroom, which is Adobe's Lightroom. And so I wrote a blog post about that last night. And I wanted to include – I don't know if you see there. I wanted to include like a screenshot of some of my Lightroom collections folders where I was going to put different photos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was writing it, I kind of bullet pointed some of the collection names that I created. And I thought, you know, it'd be nice to have like a screenshot here. So what I did was I screenshotted – Lightroom. And then I went to my desktop and literally dragged the photo right into the blog post. And I was able to move the photo around next to the bullet pointed layout.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to have to code that in some way and try to figure it out. I can drag and drop, move and resize photos right on the screen, right in the blog post. And it just works beautifully. And then I could continue writing. I could get back to what I was wanting to do, which was write and finish this blog post to help out other people who are thinking about getting into photography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is amazing what they've put together here. From the vast array of incredible new eye-catching templates that they've got over there, to the fact that the kind of stuff that you'd be paying anybody else through the nose to get, they're offering up for you for free. Now is the best time to go over and check them out. So go over to squarespace.com/grizzly. That's because we want them to know you came from us. Head over there right now. You don't need a credit card for this free trial. You don't need anything. You can goof around for 2 weeks in there and discover the amazing, amazing features behind this brand new Squarespace, or Squarespace 6 as we're calling it. If you're going to go over there and do that, by the way, I want you to use this code EGGHEAD, E-G-G-H-E-A-D, like the Vincent Price villain from the 60s Batman. Use EGGHEAD when you're over there, because we want the Squarespace people to know you're a member of the EGGHEAD army.
Yeah, that's going to get you 10% off the life of your website. So if you do sign up beyond the 2-week free trial, use that coupon code EGGHEAD to build your website. I think the plans, there's two plans. There's like an $8 a month plan, and then there's a $16 a month plan. That's the unlimited. Mm-hmm. And so if you're just building like a brochure website, you probably only need the $8 a month. If you're building something where you're going to be uploading tons of photos and podcasts and other things, you may want to go with the unlimited plan. But either one, you get 10% off if you use that coupon code. Plus, we'd love to see the websites that you're building. We would continue to send us them on Twitter. A number of you are building some great websites this month. So do it for free. You don't need a credit card, and show us what websites you have. Squarespace.com/grizzly. We thank them so much.
That's right. Now, if people want to tweet us, Clayton, how could they do this? How could this be accomplished?
We are at Grizzly Bear Cafe. Drop the egg out of the title, at Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And that is the best way to reach us, because a number of you have been sending stuff by certified mail, and that is not effective.
Right. I mean, Mike has to sign for it, and, you know, Mike, he doesn't leave the house. He
That's
can't
right.
be bothered
well,
to go
I don't
to the
like
door.
To sign for it, because usually it just means I'm being sued.
Right. You're being served, so you don't have to sign for that stuff. I understand.
Right. I can't just be like, oh, I'll just sign for this, I'll sign for that. You know, then legally I'm bound. They've got me.
Right.
You got to think about that stuff, right?
Hey, did you hear about this new Dark Knight Returns Part 1 that just came out today?
Is it the animated thing?
Yeah.
I didn't know they've been working on it for a while.
I didn't even know about it until this morning. Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, mm-hmm. of course, has been, you know, what so many pop culture Batman animated shows and movies have been based on lately, right? Sort of the darker look at Batman.
I think, to be fair, I think this is maybe up there with Watchmen. And what's crazy about this is, you know, Watchmen and The Dark Knight were in the same year. Came out roughly at the same time. They even, I think, their publication even overlapped by a few months. They are probably the two most referenced graphic novels on the DC side of the equation.
Right.
Like more than Crisis on Infinite Earths, more than, you know, Death of Superman or whatever, you know, these other kind of seminal works in the comic book medium are. The Dark Knight Turns by, and Watchmen by Alan Moore, and I guess art by Dave Gibbons, if memory serves. Those are like the two most referenced graphic novels that there are. And while it certainly had a lot of influence, I don't think The Dark Knight has been interpreted a lot. Like that grittier Batman certainly informed years and years of Batman interpretations to come. But this, I think, may be the first real telling of that story in something other than the comic book form. You know, this is the arrival of that. It's set a bit in the future. There's like a dystopian future. There's a female Robin. It's not exactly the familiar.
I guess in this, The Dark Knight Returns, I mean, it's in Gotham that we've kind of mm-hmm. never really seen before. As they explain, crime runs rampant through the city. Mm-hmm. As Batman remains on the sidelines, he's sort of old and retired.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then there's a gang of mutants that threaten to take over the city, and Bruce Wayne is finally compelled to sort of take action and end their reign of terror. So that's Dark Knight Returns Part 1. So it takes place 10 years after Batman has retired. And the first portion of this animated series hits shelves this week, September 25th. And I guess Part 2 comes out doesn't come out until next year. Mm-hmm. But I am really excited to see this. I wonder if it's on iTunes yet.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just noticing that The Avengers is on iTunes today.
Yeah, last night I noticed I was playing with my Xbox, and you know how there's the Xbox Live component, so you get like Netflix mm-hmm. and HBO Go and all that stuff through your Xbox dashboard. And there was a big ad right there for The Avengers. Watch it tonight at midnight. They were doing like a midnight showing where you could rent it at midnight and watch it with other people last night. So yeah, The Avengers out now as well. Did you pick up the new David Byrne album?
No, I haven't. It did come out about a week ago, though. So, which is usually way behind when I pick up new David Byrne stuff, unless it sneaks out when I'm not paying attention. But I am very, very interested to check that out, his new collaboration with St. Vincent.
Yeah. Yeah, called Love.
I was over in iTunes, though, looking around. I was searching around for some other stuff. You know, since we happen to be over there, I'll tell you this right now. Several of you have been kind enough to drop off 5-star reviews for us over in the iTunes store, which is a big help to us. And from time to time, you know, we like to mention the people who have done so.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the last, I don't know, month or so, we've had a couple new ones come in. For example, Dr. Imbecile.
Love that name.
Which is sort of, I don't know, a self-effacing username, if ever there was one. Left us a 5-star review that said this: these two remind me of things that have happened over the years to my friend and I, from seeing Batman on the big screen together to the love of all things music. This podcast is fantastic. And you're right, Dr. Imbecile, it is. So see, you're not so dumb after all. Thanks for dropping that off. Angie Girl dropped us off this review saying she's still listening after all these years. Listening to this show is like sitting around with friends. The guys are engaging and funny. The topics are great and timely. Give it a listen. You probably won't be sorry. You won't be sorry, Angie. And thanks for sticking with us after all these years, especially during that dark period where we had the extra host Shemp.
Right.
Mr. Creech dropped off a 5-star review for us, too. He says he loves the show. Great banter about movies, comics, video games, and technology. However, it seems as if he does not care for our takes on Prometheus, Batman Returns, and the upcoming Hobbit trilogy. Well, that's all right. You don't have to agree with us on everything, Mr. Creech. Yes, you do, Mr. Creech. Yes, you do. Go in there right now and edit that line out of your review. He says it's a highly entertaining podcast, and he tells us to keep up the good work. Clayton, keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So I was over in iTunes. I'll tell you why. Because, as I think I've mentioned recently, my son is going through a phase and has rekindled my love of The Greatest American Hero, the short-lived live-action superhero series from Stephen Cannell, whose name I used to always pronounce Cannell, but it's actually Cannell, as I discovered, that ran from 1981 to 1983. It's probably best remembered, more so than anything else about it, for its theme song, which was a really good hit. It was number one on the world charts. It went to number two on the Billboard Hot 100. It is a piece written by Mike Post, who did the music, and Stephen Geyer, who did the lyrics. But it's sung by, this is really the answer to a trivia question, Joey Scarberry. And I know you and I have talked about this at least two or three times in the last 197 episodes of The Grizz, right?
Right.
He's definitely come up before. He has a whole album, does Joey Scarberry. But that's it. He recorded this. He was just a studio session singer who worked with Mike Post. He just happened to be the guy that they picked to sing the vocals on this song. It could have been any one of the cabal of people that Mike Post uses for stuff. But it happened to be Joey Scarberry. And his voice, he has a fantastic voice. It has such character to it. And it's almost impossible to imagine someone else singing that song. Because that's it. That's all you know him for. But he did. He made an album of songs. Stephen Geyer actually wrote a lot of the songs that ended up being on his album. They were all just kind of part of that bullpen, I guess, of creative talent. But it was interesting to note that, like, in the reviews, people even said, they're like, thank God he never had another album, because how could you ever top that one song? And
it's sort of like Stan Bush's issue, isn't it?
Kind of. I think, you know, Joey Scarberry, now, to be fair, on his Wikipedia page, it does say that Joey Scarberry released an album in 2008 and one of the songs charted. But other than there, it's as if this song doesn't exist. I looked for it on YouTube. I looked for it in iTunes. I was looking for it everywhere. I can't find it. It's as if this thing doesn't even exist. He's a Californian, is Joey Scarberry. And you can find there's some – I've never even seen a photo of him other than there's a clip of him on Solid Gold lip-syncing the song during the time that it was hot. Like, I think at the time it was number 12 on the charts. He was on Solid Gold. And you know how they never really performed those songs live. They just – like lip-synced to the recording of it.
Right.
Which is kind of crazy during the parts where he's supposed to be singing his own backing vocals and they just pull the camera really far away so you can't really see what he's singing. But they were just kind of talking about how, you know, he was one of those guys that seemed to have – he was definitely like a soft rock kind of guy. And he maybe to a far lesser extent – ended up in that bag of guys like Christopher Cross, who right as the advent of MTV was happening, because they either didn't have the resources or their record label wasn't behind them in that way. You know, Christopher Cross, they've often said, was because he didn't transfer over to MTV, it killed his career. And, you know, that first album of his, that green covered one that has like the flamingo on it, he went berserk at the Grammys that year. Like in 1 year, didn't he win 4 Grammys for that album?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are a lot of people who've won Grammys that we've later mocked, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not mocking Christopher Cross. I really like Christopher Cross's stuff. But his career just kind of started to plummet.
Right.
Because he was one of those artists that never made the leap to like appealing to the MTV audience. And I actually remember I have the Encyclopedia of Rock and Roll or something to that effect that Rolling Stone of all people puts out, so that, you know, already it's a little bit questionable. But they even had, like, in his entry before they revised it, I remember the revised edition came out. It was like, now including Britney Spears. Like, oh, that'll make me spend $40. Before they revised some of it, and they actually took some of the people out. He may not even be in there anymore. They said he wasn't physically attractive enough to appear on MTV. It was like his entry was like, this dude's ugly.
Right. He wasn't a shirtless Sting in a Synchronicity concert.
Right. Like, it was unbelievably harsh. But that was a guy who had, to me, that's like a definitive early 80s sound, is that Christopher Cross, like, you know, as adult contemporaries really like emerging as its own thing. Like, he was at the forefront of that soft rock scene. And it was interesting, like, the other end of the scale is kind of Joey Scarberry, this guy who, he was randomly picked to sing this TV theme song that became a surprise hit, and they quickly slapped together an album and put him on record shelves. This guy who probably, you know, was content to be singing commercial jingles or, you know, theme songs for other Stephen Cannell productions. All of a sudden, he's on solid gold, and he's got an album that's in stores and things like that. And whereas, like, Christopher Cross, on the other hand, won all these Grammys, had number one hit after number one hit in the early 80s, and then MTV happened, and it was like his career just shriveled up and died.
Speaking of that era in the 1980s, it's funny you bring that up, because the other day on the 80s station, 80s on 8 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and you know, I think it was Nina Blackwood.
Right, Nina Blackwood, yeah, an early MTV VJ, right?
Yeah, so she's the host of that.
Yes.
I think she's one of the regular hosts that I end up catching, right? And so we were driving up to the mountains on Sunday, and I think she was hosting the show. Or no, I don't know. We were driving at apple picking or something, and it was like all early 80s, you know, because the whole station is 80s music, but they were sort of devoted this day to like 1980. And the folks that you got from that era, and you really hear that transition from like the sort of the disco era, the late 70s disco era, into what the 80s would become. And it was funny because I was thinking there was, like, you know, some Barbra Streisand stuff. There was a Swing Out Sister.
Really? From that early?
Yeah. I mean, you had – right? Because Swing Out Sister – was Swing Out Sister 1980?
No, I know.
Maybe I'm thinking – they might have thrown some other stuff in there. But there was some – definitely you had some Boz Scaggs. Some songs I had never heard of from Boz Scaggs, but pretty popular. You know, pretty popular tracks that he ends up playing, you know, live because it's a big hit. I was not familiar with it at all. Let me see if I can even find it.
I will tell you this as a guilty thing. I have every Swing Out Sister album.
Do you really?
I have them all, yeah. Their first one came out in 87. That's the one with Breakout on it. And they sort of – they were kind of like a pop act for a couple years, their first two or three albums. And then they became – they started heading off toward ambient a little bit, and now they're kind of like a lounge act. Their last two have been like almost like Sleepy Time records. And I was surprised, the single off of their most recent one now, which has got to be at least 2 or 3 years old, called Beautiful Mess, there's the single off that, Something Every Day, like I heard it playing in an elevator I was in like a week or two ago, and I was like, that really is what they're making now. Like, they make elevator music.
Oh, that's so bad.
Like, it is. I mean, it's good, like, background music when you're working. Like, it's unobtrusive in that way, but it is kind of sad because I used to really, like, their first two or three albums I really did like.
That Boz Scaggs song I was thinking about, is What Can I Say?
Oh, interesting.
Eyes are burning in the night. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big fan of his, like, Lowdown and Lido Shuffle and some of
Well, that's what most people would know, you know, like classic rock radio staples.
But I think if you heard this, I mean, there's a segment of his stuff through, I mean, he started like in, I guess he was, I didn't realize that Boz Scaggs was with Steve Miller Band. I was unfamiliar that he he was like his good school friend was Steve Miller, and so he
interesting.
Yeah, he was playing with him in 1967. Though two albums later, he left and he went solo, and then he really didn't achieve solo success until his seventh album. I mean, that's sticking with it, right?
Yeah.
And then he finally, I guess, up until a little bit later in the 70s did he actually hit it. So after like 10 years of trying to go solo, he finally hit it with some of those songs. There was a song, and it was one of those that we were driving through Germany a few weeks ago, and I heard it on the radio. I said, I've got to download this song. I don't know if I have it anywhere. It's a great 80s song, and I'm sure it's somewhere, but it's one of those that sticks out, and you're like, ooh. It's sort of like a level 42 song that you kind of don't hear all that often, and you're like you just wish you had it handy. And I just texted my wife. I'm like, what was the name of that song? I've been meant to download it when we got back to the States. So I'll see if I can dig that up too. I love that early era though, because I downloaded a song I had heard, and it reminds me of. I don't know how to put it other than to think of like Epcot Center for that early 80s style elevator, Christopher Cross kind of music. It reminds me of the type of 80s music you might hear upon landing in Orlando, Florida in the early 80s to go to Disney World. You know what I mean? And you're like on a tram and there's like...
Yeah, like Pointer Sisters, you know, like that sort of thing.
Right, or you hear like...
Slow Hand by the Pointer Sisters is like, I think, a great example of that. Do you know that song?
Yes, that's a great song.
I really do like the Pointer Sisters too. I'm not fronting about that. Like if you know, one of the three famous Pointer Sisters has passed away. She died a few years ago. And one of the other sisters now sings with them. They're all together. There have been five different Pointer Sisters over the years. They're kind of like the Three Stooges, except... Not. But like if the classic lineup of the Pointer Sisters was on tour, I would so go see the Pointer Sisters. Absolutely, I would. One of my very, very favorite 80s songs of all time is Automatic by the Pointer Sisters.
It's a great song.
But that's what I think of. Like that early, like I think a Slow Hand by the Pointer Sisters, Sailing by Christopher Cross. There actually, I have a CD compilation somewhere that's called Cool Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this story. I was working a wrestling card in the Pocono Mountains at the Tamament Resort, which may not even exist anymore. And after the event, the guy who I was rooming with, he wanted to smoke. And I said, please don't smoke in the room. You know, if you can't, just go out on the balcony or something, you know.
Right.
And he's out there smoking, and I want to go to sleep, but like the door is cracked, so there's this cold wind coming in, and I can't sleep, and you know, the smoke, of course, is wafting in. And I'm watching like late night TV, and you know, waiting for Don LaPree to come on, of course. Right. And what comes on instead is this infomercial that's hosted by like, you know, the one guy from Air Supply, not the other guy. They couldn't get them both, you know, and somebody else. And it's like, you remember all those early soft rock hits that you loved? And the first song that they advertise on that is, believe it or not, the theme from The Greatest American Hero by Joey Scarberry. And it was like the full-on version, the album version, the one that's 3 minutes and 16 seconds, not the truncated one that was the TV theme, which was like a minute and a half. The full 3:16 version of the song, which was impossible to get. And I was like, oh my God, they have that on there. And this was at a time, you know, that predates iTunes. I'm talking about 1997 here. When if you wanted songs like that, you had to buy the whole CD that they were on for one song.
Right.
You know, you basically spent $18 to get a CD for the one song that you wanted. And it had Christopher Cross on there. It had the Pointer Sisters. And I was like, oh, my God, I need this compilation, like, right now. It's, like, 2 in the morning. And I picked up the phone in the hotel. And, like, you know, I had to hit 9 to get the outside line. And I called that 800. And I was like, send me that Cool Rock. I want it right now. And it had all kinds of, like, awesome, goofy hits like that on it.
I also just picked up the new Bob Dylan record.
The Tempest.
Yeah.
Or just Tempest. Did you see the interview he gave where someone tried to compare it to Shakespeare's The Tempest? And he said, that's called The Tempest. My album is just Tempest.
I didn't hear that. It's very funny. And but apparently it's I guess he's talking about like dealing with or the struggle with religion through his life. And it's sort of like religious themes. And he admits that even though that was sort of the theme going into it, he sort of wandered from it. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of revealing that he just kind of talks about it. He's like, you know, I just couldn't keep my mind focused on just keeping it to that topic. So even not all of the songs ended up that way, but you know, people are praising the album, and I haven't really given it a good listen to yet. I listened to one or two songs because I had Germany in the middle of it there, and I had pre-ordered it on iTunes. So, but some good stuff. There's a tribute though to John Lennon on the album, and I'm not sure what song that is. I need to do a little bit more digging. It's a whole song sort of in tribute to him. And what's weird is, you know, they were sort of contemporaries, but they never knew each other. Mm-hmm. So they weren't, you know, it's not like you writing a song for me, like I have passed on and you like write a song for me. And people were like, oh yeah, they were friends, you know, they grew up, they were, you know, but they didn't really associate with one another. And there were two different tracks, right? The Beatles and Bob Dylan. And in 1964, I think is when his first kind of big album hit, right? The Free Will and Bob Dylan or whatever the name of that album was, which of course is right around the same time when the Beatles were landing in America and rocking the Ed Sullivan Theater, you know? So it was two different paths and two different styles. And I think maybe you were in one camp or the other as a fan, you know, maybe you were a Bob Dylan fan and you hated the Beatles, or maybe you were a Beatles fan and you didn't like Bob Dylan, or maybe you liked both. I don't know, but they weren't really close.
Maybe you were one of those people that liked the Stones.
Right.
But you have no voice on this podcast.
That's right. You can't be a part of the show if you do. So it's interesting that he had written a tribute song to him. Well, maybe not. I mean, they were sort of contemporaries, I guess. And of course, he has, you know, great respect for him. It's just that he's written about him and talked about him over the years. And he has this sort of weird respect for John Lennon that maybe, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't expect coming from Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I'll try to find out the name of that song. But the song I was digging for, I heard the other day, I was leaving the gym of all places. And, you know, I don't think of gym music as this type of music. I think of gym music as sort of maybe, you know, Michael Jackson, Beat It, or something, you know, whatever happens to be on in the background. So you want to kind of get up and go, right? You want to work out. You don't want some soft rock playing in the background while you're trying to work out, do you?
I don't know. I mean, to each their own.
Right. I mean, and you don't go to the gym, so...
Right.
But if I said the name of this song, would you know... I was walking out literally in the lobby, and I said, you know, I love this song. I can't explain what it is. It reminds me of the type of music I would have heard, like, landing in Orlando, Florida, in, like, the early 1980s, going to, like, Disney World, and it would have been on, like, in a hotel lobby, like, while I was waiting for my parents to check us into a hotel. And it just... I don't know. Is evocative the right word? I mean, It takes me back. And I don't know that this type of music sums up exactly what I was talking about, like 1978, 79 into 1980s style. Do you know this song called Rise?
Rise?
Mm-hmm.
Not by that name. I mean, maybe if I heard a little bit of it, I would.
I'm going to play a little bit of this here for you.
Okay.
Here we go. See if you recognize it.
I don't know, but I dig it already.
Keep it going. Here we go, here we go. Here we go.
It does sound very familiar.
Wait till they get into the... Here we go. Now you're going to recognize this. Once we get into the main part, you'll see. You recognize this?
Yeah. This should play when I'm getting on the love boat.
Right. It's like something. Welcome to Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. I'm Robin Leach. Today we're out on the Grand Riviera. But something about this just speaks late 70s, early 80s to me.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
That's Herb Alpert.
Really?
Yeah, it's Herb Alpert from his album Rise. That's the name of the song. I'm sorry, the song is Rise. Is that what I said, Rise? Yeah, the song is Rise.
Yeah, yeah.
Rise by Herb Alpert. So, of course, he's quite famous. But yeah, I heard that, and I said, and I just pulled my phone up. And what's great about, you know, like whatever Shazam or whatever apps you have on your iPhone or your smartphone, you just hold it up, you know, and does the little listening and tells you mm-hmm. exactly what the song is. You're like, oh, I'm buying it right now. So I bought it on the spot.
Mm.
Anyway.
Yeah, that to me is it's like that the soft rock sound. Like before they really coined the term adult contemporary, which I know was right around that same time. I found, incidentally, on Amazon, if you wanted to go and buy Cool Rock, you can get it. It still exists. It's on Amazon.com. This will give you a sense of just some of the other stuff that's on there. Some of my very favorite 80s songs are on there, including Always Something There to Remind Me by Naked Eyes, Hold Me Now by the Thompson Twins, one of my very, very favorites, True by Spandau Ballet, which is really, I think, emblematic of that sound.
Mm-hmm.
True. Here are some of the other ones that are on there that I think give you a sense of, like, this very much fits into that sound. Baby Come to Me by James Ingram and Patty Austin.
Mm.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I Just Died in Your Arms by The Cutting Crew. Missing You by John Waite is one of them. Never Gonna Let You Go by Sergio Mendez. Do you know that one? I'm Never Gonna Let You Go.
Yeah.
That one, of course. Solid by Ashford and Simpson. Right, like that's a Believe It or Not by Joey Scarberry. It Must Have Been Love by Roxette, even though that was more like end of the 80s. Anything by Kool and the Gang Whatsoever. The Christopher Cross song on here is Think of Laura, which is actually that's not one of my favorites of his at all. I don't really care for Think of Laura.
Is there
Hold On by Wilson Phillips.
Is there a song on there? We've mocked the 80s compilation albums before where there's always the obligatory, Mickey by Tony Basil.
No, no. On there. That's the thing. Like these definitely have like those softer ones, and that's more of like a rock. Lady in Red by Chris DeBerg is on there. Yeah, none of those, you know, like Whip It by Devo wouldn't fit here. Like that's definitely one of those. It's amazing to me. Like the middle 80s, like the arrival of New Wave, the sound that best exemplifies that to me is the Cars, the band The Cars. And they are definitely one of those groups where rarely do you see them licensing their stuff out for compilations like this.
Yeah,
wouldn't you agree
really
with me?
Don't.
Like, you don't see The Cars. Like they're definitely in that group, like Michael Jackson, Billy Joel. Their stuff does not get licensed for this type of stuff. And as I've come to better understand that, I have to think that it may not necessarily be that they don't, but that they set the price for their individual songs so high that the people that make these compilations can't justify putting that on there because they'll never recoup their money. You know, to put like Drive by The Cars or Magic or, one of those. Tonight She Comes is another like huge middle 80s Cars hit that's really like very new wavy in sound.
You're reminding me of a I'll talk about this album in a second. We should pause here and thank our show sponsor, our good friends over at Cobra. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them? I'm going to do some digging here because there's an album I wanted to talk about that just came out that I think will be of import to us.
Oh, okay. I also want to say, by the way, the Cars album from like a year ago when they got back together, granted without, you know, their bassist passed away a few years ago, but Rick Ocasek and the surviving members of the Cars did get back together like a year ago and made a new album, and it's awesome.
It is really good.
It's like straight out of the 80s. Like their sound hasn't evolved or changed one bit, and thank God for that. Anyway.
What's the name of that album, by the way? Because I love that album.
The single's called Blue Tip. I couldn't tell you what the name of the... the name of the album is, though. But, like, amazing. Amazing. I hope it did really well for them and they're encouraged to keep making albums in that vein.
It was called Move Like This.
Yes, you're right. Thank you for that. Which you can get, and it comes with a really awesome digital booklet if you get it on iTunes. Nevertheless, Cobra Electronics, our long-standing show sponsor, right? If you like the fact that our podcasts are free, I need you to go over and see our friends at Cobra Electronics so that they keep supporting us because we really could not deliver all the great programs on the Grizzly Productions Network if not for longstanding great show sponsors, Cobra Electronics. They make stuff for people who live on the go, like me, like Clayton, and maybe like you as well. If you're a frequent road tripper, the Cobra iRadar system is going to make you safer and more alert. And this is a great addition, especially for anybody that, if you've got a family, you're out there traveling with little ones and things like that, where it's easy to be distracted in the car. Something like the Cobra iRadar is the solution that you need. And right now they're offering it with a terrific discount. Go over to Cobra.com and look in the specials section where they offer all kinds of great deals that get updated and changed all the time. For example, it may not even be going on anymore. I think they extended it for a while because it was so popular. They were offering buy one, get one free on the Cobra Tag two-way locator system. They have all kinds of great professional-grade GPS for maybe you're a pro truck driver. Maybe you live your life on the water and you need greater marine navigation. Maybe you need radio solutions for your business, all that type of stuff, and a whole lot more from the industry leaders and constant innovators over at Cobra Electronics. You go and take a look just at some of the great demo videos that they put together for their vast array of products, and you're going to realize why it is that these guys are at the forefront of these emerging technologies. And the Cobra Tag is like the perfect example of that, right? You put the Cobra Tag on any item you want to protect, like your briefcase, your laptop, bag. You can put it on your dog's collar if you really wanted to. And in the event that that item was ever misplaced or became lost, you could use your smartphone to locate it. It'll ring the key fob or the Cobra Tag for you, or if it's so far away that you can't hear it, it'll draw you a map to where the item is. It's amazing the stuff that they've come up with. It'll blow you away. And I need you to take just a minute out of your day and go over to Cobra.com and find out more about the great innovations from our friends and show sponsors at Cobra Electronics. We want to thank them for supporting us and the whole Grizzly Productions Network. We couldn't do it without them.
Indeed. Thank you to Cobra. And hey, congratulations to, you know, the Emmys were the other night. And not that I watch, but I think, like, I don't watch them, but I'm sort of pulling for the people that I want to win, right? So I was hoping that Aaron Paul would pull out a victory in for Breaking Bad, his role as Jesse on Breaking Bad. He won.
Oh.
An Emmy for so Giancarlo Esposito, who played Gus, was also nominated for Best Supporting Actor, but Aaron Paul won. Oh, and someone on Twitter wrote us a listener of the show, longtime listener of The Grizz, said we may be interested to watch Revolution on NBC because Giancarlo Esposito is in that show. He is. I don't know what character he plays, but he is in that show. So who else won? I want to see if
it would be really tough to see him as not a villain.
Right. You know? Jeremy Davies. Oh, that's great. In Justified. Also won for guest actor in a drama series. That was cool. And, you know, Homeland was like the big winner.
Which I can't believe.
I don't understand. What is the premise of that? Claire Danes won for her lead actress in a drama series.
Right. Like she sees the threats everywhere or whatever. Like all I had to see was one billboard. And I saw Claire Danes' face and I was like, I'm never watching that.
Hmm.
Yeah, apparently some people think it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. The Daily Show won. Kevin Costner for his miniseries that Hatfields and McCoys show won.
Right.
And Modern Family won for Best Comedy.
Mm.
Beat out Curb Your Enthusiasm, 30 Rock, Veep. And I don't know, I feel like they just kind of give – I mean, I like Modern Family a lot. I thought this season was a little bit weaker than the previous seasons. Or kind of started slow. Like when they were out on that ranch, that dude ranch. I don't know if you saw that episode or not.
No, I've fallen behind.
Yeah. But then the season really picked up, and it was funnier as the season progressed. But I thought there was – it's kind of boring. First, like, few episodes, I wasn't really into it. Veep, though, is very funny. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who plays the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very funny show, and she's very good in it. And she's sort of at odds with the president, and so she's constantly wondering if he's called. She'll come in. Has the president called? Oh, okay. All right. Well, and she just tries to find things to fill her day. It's very funny. And her staff is a mess. And so she.
It's amazing that she's finally found a series that works for her. Because
I guess, although you and I think that, right? But there have been a number of successful seasons for her where she's been like Emmy nominated for like what that new Adventures of Old Christine show.
Right.
Yeah. I think you and I would agree that like, that's not something a show we would ever watch.
Yeah.
Like but Veep is, I watched it a couple of times. It's very funny.
Mm.
It's very funny. And I think it's on HBO, right? Yeah. It's HBO. So it's, you know, she swears a lot. She gets very angry. So it's pretty funny. Anyway, just saw those, the Emmy rundown here and everyone keeps praising, Downton Abbey, which is that,
I don't even know what that is.
It's that BBC show that people say – because I tweeted the other day. I said, season two of Sherlock is now available on Netflix for streaming. And that is, I mean, one of the best BBC shows ever, in my opinion. Fantastic stuff. That new Sherlock show. And it's only three episodes each season because they're like 90 minutes long. They're almost like mini movies. Mm-hmm. But that that guy Cumberbatch plays Sherlock. and he's great. He is fantastic. And and so anyway, I tweeted that, oh, the second season is now available to watch on Netflix. And we haven't watched it yet. So I couldn't wait to jump in and start watching that. And I said, best season ever, you know, or best show ever on BBC or best show currently on BBC. And people writing and said, yes, it's excellent. And then other people were writing and saying, obviously, you've never seen Downton Abbey. And I haven't. You're right. I've heard great things about that. And I guess tonight or this week begins the new American version of Sherlock called Elementary.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some stuff for that, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it might be interesting. It's the guy who plays, what, Jordan Chase from Dexter is
right.
The main guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really tough for me to see him as anything other than that. I think it's going to be the same thing. Like, the people on Dexter are just so effective in those roles. Like, when that series is over, the guy who plays Dexter, what's his name, Michael Hall?
Yeah, Michael C. Hall.
Yeah, or C. Michael Hall, whatever it is. I'm never going to be able to see him as anything other than Dexter.
Right.
You know? I think I've heard nothing but great stuff about David Duchovny in Californication.
Right.
But I am not going to watch David Duchovny if he's not Fox Mulder. Like, you must be Fox Mulder.
Yeah, I felt the same way, and I watched like the first two seasons of Californication, and he is fantastic in it. And you really forget that he's Fox Mulder.
That must be a testament to him as an actor, because I just can't imagine him as anything other than Fox Mulder.
Yeah, he did a good job. I think he won an Emmy for it, too. He was up for it anyway. Did a great job.
Speaking of, whatever happened to Gillian Anderson?
Good question.
It was like, we canceled the X-Files, and she's like, you know what? I think I'm just done having a career.
Didn't she have – let me look her up. Didn't she have like a kid, and she just was like, I'm done? It's kind of like what Phoebe Cates – it's like what Phoebe Cates did, right?
Well, you know, at least once during the run of the X-Files, she really was pregnant, and she did – you know, she did have a child during the time. You remember she was like married to like the lighting director or something from the X-Files. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
This might have been like season four, I want to say, that, you know, she got together with – it was right around the time when – what are those magazines that declare like the sexiest woman on earth? Is that like Maxim or – One of those, the year that Gillian Anderson was, they said, this is the – I remember the cover read, the headline read, Smart is Sexy.
I remember that.
They declared her the sexiest woman in the world. That was the same year that she married like the gaffer from the X-Files and bore him a child. And then before the series was even over, I believe they were divorced.
She had a nomination for Best Actress in Laurence Olivier Awards in 2010. Some stuff that she did on the BBC. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize this about her at all.
She was Scully on the X-Files.
I didn't realize that she was gay. She, in an interview with Out Magazine this year, says she had a past relationship in high school with an older woman. Saying, if I had thought I was 100% gay, would it have been a different experience for me? Would it have been a bigger deal? I guess she's not gay, but she thought she might have been. I don't know.
Right. What percentage gay is she saying that she's in this article? As opposed to not 100%, but you know.
Just like a 10%, like a 10% gay.
Oh, I see.
That's like what you are. you're right. She married her first husband, Clyde Klotz, the X-Files senior assistant.
Clyde Klotz.
What a great name. She's like, and she knows, she said to him, honey, there's no way in hell I'm taking that last name.
Right.
Gillian Klotz from Gillian Anderson.
Yeah.
He was the assistant art director on They Married on New Year's Day in 1994. And they had a daughter and they divorced in 1997.
Was the daughter named Piper?
Yes. Wow. What? How did you know that?
There's some weird trivia for you, huh?
Piper Maru.
Yeah, do you know why I know that? Because that's the title of one of the episodes of The X-Files.
I do remember that. There was a boat called the Piper Maru, right? Isn't that one where her dad – or I don't know, something with her dad, like she keeps seeing him like in the living room. Remember that? Mm. Like his ghost of her – I don't know. Or he appears to – I don't know. There was something with this ship, the Piper Maru, that they were trying to track down that had some sort of mysterious thing on board the Piper Maru. Mm-hmm. Cool name though.
Right. Yeah, I know. I remember that very distinctly, that they named the kid after the that episode of The X-Files. And it was a strange connection, too. I was just thinking about this. You remember the episode where they finally, after Scully's father's passed away, they scatter his ashes. And one of his, you know, his final requests in his will or whatever was that they play Somewhere Beyond the Sea.
Right.
As they scattered his ashes, which is the same song that plays over the closing credits of Finding Nemo.
Which is also the same song. It's the name of that episode, Beyond the Sea, is the name of that particular episode in the X-Files.
Mm. Yeah. Is the song Beyond the Sea or Somewhere Beyond the Sea?
It's beyond,
I'm not getting
yeah,
that title right.
It's Beyond the Sea.
Yeah.
So I will say this. So she then remarried to Julian Ozon, a documentary filmmaker.
And oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Then they got separated in 2006. Mm-hmm. So they were together mm-hmm. for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Then she was with a guy but didn't get married to him named Mark Griffiths. From which she has two sons.
Mm-hmm.
So she has, I guess, three kids.
She's quite a brood. Was he also a gaffer?
No, I don't know who he is.
He's the best boy.
But they ended their relationship this year. So now she's single again with three kids. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right. In FHM, what's that?
FHM, you're right. That's what it was. FHM was the name of that magazine. Do they still make that magazine? Does that even exist?
I think so. Yeah, 1996, she was named the sexiest woman in the world. So interesting. But no, going back to what I was going to say, and I found fascinating, is that she's from England.
You would never know that from how she hides her accent.
Yeah, and she has an English accent, which is amazing to me.
Right.
What's interesting is that she grew up, I guess, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and apparently because of her English accent, she was mocked by the kids there, and she felt out of place in the American Midwest. So she soon adopted a Midwest accent. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. To this day, her accent depends on her location, she says. She told in an interview with Jay Leno, she said that she was speaking to him in her American accent, but then shifted it for an interview for an English station where she kind of spoke with an English accent again. So it's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that quality, the linguistic chameleons, as they're known, they shift their accent to make the listener more comfortable. They mimic their accent. And sometimes you'll find yourself doing that even unconsciously. You know, that you'll moderate your diction some of the inflection and the stress that you put on certain syllables to mimic someone, you know, like the listener, if they speak differently from you, to put them at ease. It's like an unconscious technique that people use to make a conversation go more smoothly.
Interesting. To make you feel more at ease, I guess. And the last film that she's done, I guess, is the X-Files, the 2008 I Want to Believe. So 10 right. years after that original X-Files film. Did you ever see that I Want to Believe?
No, that second one I never saw. But I know people that did, and they all said to me, it's terrible.
I saw it. It's the one that has the crazy – who's the guy that plays in it? He's like a comedian who's like a killer, or he's kind of nutty, and it's all frozen over. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Gallagher?
No.
Gallagher 2.
Billy Connolly.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like the blood shows up in the snow and they're all frozen. And man, that was so terrible. If you have 10 years to come up with.
It was like they just had one script left over and they're like, what are we going to do with this?
Yeah.
Just make it the movie. But this one was terrible. We rejected it for like 15 years.
It was in development for 7 years. So it was supposed to come out in 2001, but it never did. And it was like just stuck in like development limbo for so long.
Right. Like that Spider-Man movie that was supposed to have Tom Cruise in it in 1988.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? You remember they even made posters for that? Like, I remember in the back of a newsprint magazine that was called Comics Interview, they even had the poster. They're like, we have the exclusive first look at the Spider-Man poster for the movie that was supposed to have Tom Cruise in it. And it was like, the costume looked like the version that was on The Electric Company. You remember that? Like when Spider-Man would have like a thing where he'd teach you how to read on The Electric Company?
Yeah.
It was like that costume. And it was like a guy like doing a weird ballet pose against – like superimposed against a badly drawn web. It's like coming to theaters, the superhero you can't get enough of, and a little frumpy little costume.
That's crazy. I'm trying to dig for that picture. I would love to see that picture.
I can I know exactly what it looks like. It's like this blue background. It's him crouched low along the bottom frame, you know, along the bottom. He's like, what am I trying to say here? Along the bottom edge of the image. And right. It's really text heavy. And it's like a Spider-Man logo that's not familiar. Like, you know, like, I don't know why they do that. Like, why do they make a new logo?
Right. I was just thinking about that the other day. In fact, I described it to my wife. We were having a discussion about what Spider-Man cartoons are appropriate for our son.
Right.
And I was saying, you know, I think that the 90s Spider-Man animated cartoon that's available on Netflix, it has like the jagged Spider-Man logo. It's like says Spider-Man, but it's like all pointy.
Right.
I said, that one is pretty good, right? There's got all different characters in it. You get like Doc Ock, you get all, you know, and it's well done and it's fun. And I think, you know, he's into that one. But yeah, it looks completely different, of course, than the comic book covers or than the famous sort of iconic font used from Spider-Man from the 60s Spider-Man.
Right. Which I think is still on the front cover. I don't know why they reinvent that. Like, there are so many, for example, like real Batman logos. Why were they like, you know what? I think for these movies, we're just going with Arial Black.
Right.
You know, I think these proprietary fonts that they've come up with, forget about them.
Like, we're going to do some Comic Sans.
Right. You know, like, who's doing that? I don't know if you know this about that Spider-Man animated series from the 90s, but if you watch it like in reruns now, I think it's unwatchable because a lot of those shows like that, when they get sold into syndication packages, some of them from that time period, they were made at a length of 24 minutes an episode. But as you know, then half hour episodes of television changed to where it's actually 22 minutes of content.
Sure.
Because they wanted to use two more minutes for advertising. So shows like that have been recut so that 2 minutes are missing. And on that Spider-Man, that series more than any other show I've ever seen, the cuts are so abrupt and quick. You can see where they're cutting the time out to create the 2 extra minutes of advertising, and it makes the show unwatchable, in my opinion. You want to watch the full episodes without those extra 2 minutes of editing. It makes it so irritating to watch. But
yeah, and you know, can get them on Netflix. I think they're full on Netflix. They've got the original, and that's where I end up watching them anyway. The one that has the jagged Spider-Man logo. I think it's called Spider-Man the Animated Series, and they made
right. Yeah, there's a ton of them.
Yeah,
there are a lot of them. Yeah, it is more violent than the ones that, you know, like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends from the 80s, or of course the 1967 Spider-Man series.
We were having a debate about that. What's the appropriate? And I thought, you know, the episodes I've seen of that, it didn't strike me as super violent. And maybe I just missed some of the ones that were. So maybe it's more appropriate to show him the 67 animated series or Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Although Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends doesn't hold his attention or it didn't hold his attention because it's a lot of them hanging around, like going to dances and stuff or like hanging around in that apartment, you know, and
it's them and their secret identities, which I think this is a real reason why to us as kids and now like even watching our own kids, the 60s Batman holds your attention because they're Batman and Robin 90% of the time. And it's the complete opposite if you watch the 70s and even the early 80s superheroes. And I'm saying this now because I am all caught up on the first season of Greatest American Hero. But watch the Bill Bixby Hulk, the Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man, Greatest American Hero, anything from that time period. They're the secret identity characters 95% of the episode.
Oh, and Spider-Man, that Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man, as you mentioned, my God, you're like, he's probably on camera for like a minute and a half.
Right. There's so little of the superhero identity, and that's what you're watching for. There was one, we were watching one, it was Night of the Clones. From 1977, the Amazing Spider-Man series, Night of the Clones episode, there's one scene of Peter Parker in a chair having a dialogue for 6 straight minutes. 6 minutes episode.
Which episode is this?
Night of the Clones.
From what series? I'm sorry.
The Amazing Spider-Man with Nicholas Hammond. And it's just Peter talking. I mean, it cuts to the other person in the conversation with him, who's Rita at the Daily Bugle. 6 minutes of nothing but dialogue, of these two static shots, like two talking head shots of them back and forth. And like my son had run off. Like he was driving his little tricycle cart thing into the wall repeatedly. He was so bored. like, where is Spider-Man in this episode? And It's the same thing with that Bill Bixby Hulk, right? Like you wait 40 minutes for him to turn into the Hulk. But you watch that 60s Batman, they're Batman and Robin almost all the time. Like
right.
They're Bruce and Dick at the very beginning of the episode, and they go down the bat poles, and then rarely if ever do you see Bruce and Dick again.
That's
you know,
true,
They have like that 1 minute interlude where they tell a story to Aunt Harriet, like, oh, we're going on a fishing trip, down the bat poles.
Oh, you boys going on a fishing trip.
Oh, Madge Blake, you died too soon.
Cut to them going down the bat pole. You're right about that. It's funny that the formula for those old shows, and I'm just sort of wondering, my wife, she's reading a book about, it was a chapter in her most recent book that she's reading on parenting about.
Adam West.
Right. Or, just television with the kids. And if you use it sort of passively and you just sort of sit your kids in front of the television, that's the wrong thing to do. But to actually sit and engage them with the stories and the messages that are in the show that you're watching, not to just put it on as a distraction, which, we take umbrage with because, like as my wife points out, sometimes putting on an episode of Curious George on the iPad enables her to make dinner for him,
Right. Like,
so you kind of take those things with a grain of salt, of course. But nevertheless, we were talking about the violence in certain things. And, of course, we were watching some of the Batman the Animated Series, which we put the kibosh on because it's a little too dark.
Right. There's, gunplay. In addition to, constant fisticuffs, there's gunplay.
Right. And I remember you had said that, the 1960s Batman, you had to put a kibosh on the fighting scenes because the pow and bam. It's sort of like the fights amplified because you're seeing pow and bam and, it's – He'll want to run around. I guess you were saying your son would want to run around and then go pow and bam at daycare.
Faces.
Right. That's not appropriate.
Nope.
So it should be interesting. We should do a Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe and sort of codify the shows we think are best for our sons at this age. Because I'm curious about Star Wars, right? He has a Star Wars pajamas set.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows Darth Vader from that. But he has no concept of Star Wars at all.
Right.
And I'm curious where to start with him. I don't remember when you and I saw Star Wars when we were kids. What point did we endear to it? Right.
To me, it was omnipresent in pop culture. I think even before I saw Star Wars, and I saw Star Wars around the time Empire was coming into theaters.
Me too. Yeah.
But I'd already had the figures, because. I don't know the exact timeline, but there was definitely a television special for Star Wars that maybe was on at Christmas time or something. I know I saw that. Hmm. I don't know when those cartoons came on. Do you remember Droids was a cartoon?
I don't.
And then it was all about C-3PO and R2-D2. And then later Ewoks had a cartoon.
Maybe
it was
I remember
at the same
that.
Time. I don't know. That would have been around Jedi, I guess. But
I do remember Ewoks.
Star Wars was omnipresent, right? You'd go to the toy store, there were the figures, and they had awesome figures. Star Wars had the greatest action figure line with those photo – the photo of the character, the way they looked in the movie from a scene in the movie was on the
box,
card itself. When you went out looking for Halloween costumes, and there were all these Star Wars Halloween costumes for you to be. Star Wars was ubiquitous.
And I remember, I saw Empire in the theater. I remember waiting in line with my parents. It was so long. And my parents,
right.
We got in line at the movie theater 2 hours ahead of time. And it was a cultural event to be there. And I just remember being in that line. And my dad went off to Kentucky Fried Chicken so that we could eat some lunch while we were waiting in this line. And he brought back a bucket of chicken and some stuff for us to eat while we were in this line. And I think my sister was not yet – or was just born, I think. And so she was at home with my grandmother or something.
I thought you were going to say she had the extra crispy.
Right. She had the mashed potatoes and the gravy, which are delicious, by the way. But no, I was looking at the Clone Wars, the current iteration of the anime. Started in 2008.
Yes.
And it's really popular. What are they on, the fifth season now of this?
It is really, really popular. I can tell you just from the amount of merchandise that I see out there. It must be very, very popular.
And I know that a lot of my friends' kids watch it and enjoy it, but I have not I don't know what is, age appropriate for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how violent it is. But I just think that's a whole universe that I would love to introduce him to.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would find it endlessly fascinating like I did. And I also wish – I know there are the two camps, right, the people that love Star Wars and they're the people that love Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I love both. I don't have – I came into Star Trek when I was much older. And and enjoyed it a lot. But I had to think, well, maybe my son would enjoy like the 60s Star Trek, you know, with the sort of the pastel colors and the way that your son enjoys like the 60s Batman. Maybe he would enjoy just sitting and watching a little bit of that. You know, I don't know that he'd be terribly intrigued. Might be a little too boring for him. But there are enough colorful characters and spaceships and things like that that he might – and it's fairly tame, you know. It's fairly tame when you think about it.
Well, Kirk does like to fight.
That is true.
I got to say, that's one of the things I always loved about Shatner on that show. Like, to me, he'll always trump Picard because Picard's just like an old fuddy-duddy that sits in his chair.
And Kirk never leaves.
Kirk
ship,
gets up and fights. Kirk wants to make out with the green alien chick.
Right.
And Kirk wants to fight.
I think even in the first episode, as I went back, or there was like the story arc time for when he meets this one chick who's on an away mission. Like, it's literally like one commercial break before he's making out with her. I mean, what a dog. And he's always fighting with his shirt off, too. You never notice that? So,
right. Way to go, Kirk.
But yeah, maybe introduce him to a little bit of that Star Trek. Keep him away from some of the fighting scenes. Because I'm familiar with all 79 episodes of Star Trek. So I know exactly what's in just about every episode. I can tell you when like a fight scene's going to unfold or whether there's not going to be a fight scene. So I can put those particular episodes on. But the Clone Wars, if any of our listeners watch the Clone Wars with their kids, like what do you think is age appropriate to get them started on this? Again, my son is 2.5 or almost 2.5 now. So he but he's pretty advanced, you know. He understands a lot of the comic book characters. He understands the Avengers, and he was watching a Thor episode of the Avengers series the other day against the Frost Giants, and he likes that. You know, big Iron Man fan too, and I think those Avengers animated series are pretty good.
Yeah, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Hopefully, they keep that going a little bit longer. You know, I know a lot of the stuff out there is being remade to better suit the cinematic universe, like all you know, all the Marvel reboots they're going on with that Marvel Now thing. You know, Amazing Spider-Man is about to end. 700 is the last issue of Amazing Spider-Man, and you saw they introduced that new like kid Spider-Man or whatever. I saw the poster of that like in every comic book store window of like, you know, Peter Parker next to the new Spider-Man or whatever. And I just that whole thing. I don't know. It's very repellent. It's very repellent as a concept to me. I understand as a business move why they need to do it, right? If that is the interpretation of their universe that most of the world is familiar with, how jarring it must be for new readers to pick up a book and Hawkeye doesn't look anything like he did in the movie. But on the other hand, like those are the characters I loved and grew up with. And for them to just dispense all that continuity, right? Like 50 or 60 years of continuity. Spider-Man's 50, right? So
yeah.
I don't know. I find that it's very disheartening to me.
So is your son into the Clone Wars at all? Does he watch any of that?
No. You know, the only thing that's kind of that fictional realm, really, you know, we watch the Super Friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, 6 minutes of Peter talking to Rita, waiting for Spider-Man to show up. And a couple episodes of Ralph, as he's known in the house. The Greatest American Hero show is simply known as Ralph.
Yeah, and what's great about, I mean, so much stuff on, so much stuff free out there, you know, on YouTube, you can stream it. Plus, there's so much great stuff on the iPad. There's a bunch of free apps from like the Cartoon Network and other things that have a bunch of this stuff. I don't even know where Clone Wars airs. Is it on this like Sci-Fi Channel or
no? That's Cartoon Network.
Oh, it's on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, because it used to be right as I would tune in for Batman: The Brave and the Bold, it was ending. So,
yeah. So anyway, there's an album I wanted to tell you about, and I've forgotten about it. And I heard it while I was over in Germany, and I heard the first single from it. And I said, wait a minute, this sounds like it was from the 1980s, and it sounds fantastic. Pet Shop Boys.
Oh, they have a new album, do they?
They have a new album that just came out, and their first single is called Leaving. And it's really good. And the album is called Elysium. Elysium. But here's what I can't figure out. Is it available in the United States at all? It seems like you can buy it through like the Pet Shop Boys website. And you can get like some import version of it. But I don't know that you can actually buy the – if you're still on iTunes, look it up and see if you
can. No, I'm not. But yeah, sometimes they do that. You know, like that last Raul Madone album was available, you know, outside the U.S. for a full year. before you could get it here. I don't know, you know, what it has something to do with the rights. You know, who has the rights for North American distribution is what it boils down to. But
no, I'm wrong. I'm wrong. You know, here it is. Yeah, it is available in the U.S. It's out now, called Elysium.
Okay. That's good, because it's definitely, you know, to bring it back around to what we were talking about like an hour ago, Swing Out Sister went through that too. Their stuff was released in Europe and Asia, and you couldn't get it here in North America. There's at least one or two Swing Out Sister albums like that, that you have to get them as imports. You couldn't find them on the racks here. And I know there's at least one Pet Shop Boys album that was true of, that it had no North American distribution.
Hmm. And people are praising it in the reviews section here, saying it's a masterpiece from them, another great jewel to add to their 26 years catalog of music. Give it some breathing space, others are saying, at 4 out of 5 stars. Please keep in mind, Elysium can be hard to love on the first listen, but you have to give repeated listens to it and you may enjoy it quite a bit. So I don't know. I can't wait to check that out. So a bunch of good albums out lately. That Bob Dylan album, the new David Byrne record out. I think there's a new Diana Krall album out also.
Well, I tell you what, how about this? For next week's Grizz, Clayton will listen to the new Pet Shop Boys album. I will listen to the new David Byrne album. And we will discuss this and other relevant topics to the Egghead Army when we reconvene for what will then be the 199th Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe podcast.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you real quick, I can't make it for 200. So
we should do something special for, you know, I was thinking
about
this.
Let's get Shemp on again.
First of all, I'll get over my cough for that show. But you know what I was thinking about doing?
Mm.
And we can talk about this offline. But I have been loving doing some Google Hangout stuff lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I did one the other night for my book club. And boy, did I meet some awesome people. I mean, really cool people.
Mm-hmm.
I met a guitarist who plays with Joe Satriani. People just popped into this Google Hangout because I posted it, and they were like, you know, sitting by their computers doing stuff. And one guy popped up from his guitar studio. He's like, "Hey, Clayton," you know. I had other people join in, and just to talk about history books. And boy, we had a great time. And I thought we should do this for like our 200th episode of the Grizz.
Mm-hmm.
Get longtime listeners of the show, do sort of a Google Plus Hangout that we can then maybe publish as the 200th show.
Mm-hmm.
And just have conversations with people like we would normally hear on the show, just about comic books, movies, music. We can just have a big discussion about what's going on and get people to interact and ask them questions of us. They can ask us questions. We can whatever. I think it might be a lot of fun. So what do you think about that?
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and let me know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
We'll see how
it goes. I boycott Google.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right. No wonder you can never do a search on the web. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Who do I call?
That's right.
I use the Chinese version.
Ask Jeeves. Do you know them?
Right. What's that old one? Dog pile. What was it? There was like a couple of old. You're still using Netscape.
Mm-hmm.
So, so no wonder you,
Netscape.
You just found out Bill Clinton was elected.
Yeah. Yeah, I am a little behind when it comes to those things, to be fair.
So maybe we could even do like a feedback episode and just, you know, have people ask whatever questions they want.
Mm,
we do
like WEEU.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll figure it out. But maybe we'll do that on Google Plus. So here's an idea, and maybe we'll throw this out there. So go over to our Google Plus page, right? We have a Grizzly Bear Cafe Google Plus page. Go over there and follow us there and interact and say, yes, you would like to have us do for the 200th episode as sort of a Google Plus Hangout Q&A kind of rap session, talk with all of our great listeners over the years, and post that up there, and we'll add you to our circle. So if we see you interacting over there, we'll add you to our circle, and then we'll make an invitation and send it out to you and see how this all unfolds and see if we want to do it or not.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll just do it in addition to our 200th episode. We'll just do it one random night that we pick that's sort of a Grizz hangout, you know, where we just kind of get together with our listeners. Maybe it won't be the episode per se, but it'll just be a separate hangout.
You know?
We'll see how that goes.
We see how it plays.
Indeed. All right, my friend.
All right, time to go potty now. See ya.
See ya.